Happy Halloween to one and all. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm glad to be with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn. This hour, we spookify your reading list with titles designed to terrify and delight you. With our guest Becky Spratford, she's joining us this hour. Becky is the Reader's Advisory Librarian at Berwyn Public Library in Illinois and an adjunct professor at the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at Dominican University. She's also the author of Horror Readers Advisory and the forthcoming book to be published in January, The Reader's Advisory to Horror, Second Edition. And we want to hear from you this hour. What are your favorite scary reads? And what do you turn to again and again when you want a thrill? Or what new books have spiked your spookometer? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send your email to talk@wpr.org. And Becky Spratford, thank you so much for joining us on this Halloween day.
You're welcome.
Well, you must be in your glory today. This is the high holiday for people who love scary, all things scary, and of course, scary books, your specialty. What have you been reading to celebrate?
You know, everyone was asking me to read the brand new Colson Whitehead book, Zone One, which is actually more of a literary fiction than a zombie book, but it's been in a lot of the press, including a lot of things about it on NPR. About it. And so I did read it and get a review up yesterday on my blog talking about it.
Great. Yeah, I was going to ask you about it. So I guess the critique of that one is, sure, there's zombies in it, zombies in New York, but there's a lot of stuff that's not about zombies, too.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. I really enjoyed the book, and I happen to personally love anything zombie, whether it's, you know, the more satirical, like a movie like Shaun of the Dead, or something more traditional like The Walking Dead TV show or graphic novels. But what I really liked about this one, and I want to preface by saying I'm actually not a huge Colson Whitehead fan in general, but what I really liked about this one is how it was an interior story of what really would happen if there was a zombie apocalypse. It had enough scary in there, but it had a lot of slow time where the main character, is talking about how life has changed so much. The other great thing Whitehead has done, and this is what he'll be remembered for with horror fans, is he introduced a whole new type of zombie here. He calls these zombies the stragglers. And it's opposed to the regular zombie that sort of reanimates and compulsively searches out fresh human meat. These zombies roam back to a place of meaning from their past and sort of just stay there. For example, they come upon a guy at the copier and it's just going over and over again in the office. Or the psychiatrist who goes into the office as a zombie and literally sits in the chair waiting for patients that will never come. It's quite interesting, and they spend a lot of time talking about that and comparing those straggler zombies to the humans that are left behind as sort of the counterpoint, the straggler humans. It's quite interesting.
And scary?
You know, I have to say, it's a dark and bleak book. If you're a horror fan, probably not scary enough for you. But if you're someone who wants to just sort of try it out, there's not a lot of gore. It's completely opposite from watching The Walking Dead on TV or reading those or graphic novels, which are extremely visceral. I quite enjoy them. But if you wanted to try something with zombies, I would try this. It, you know, I have to say, without giving away the ending, it's extremely bleak, though. So if you're looking for an uplifting, you know, happy read, it's not the one.
Right. Well, I don't imagine a lot of scary books are inspiring or uplifting, though.
Well, you know, if you read, people read a lot of Stephen King, and quite often the heroes win out in the end in a Stephen King story. It depends on the story, but he has a zombie book called Cell, and he's famous. It's older now, but he's famous for hating cell phones. I don't know if he still owns one yet, but he's always said he doesn't like them. So a bunch of years ago, he wrote a story about basically this pulse that goes through his cell phone and turns everyone who's on their cell phone at that moment into a zombie. And in the end, the good guys win, Stephen King's good guys. So, you know, there are some where the little man triumphs and wins the day, which is one reason why some people really do like horror books. But today, the biggest trend I see in horror fiction is, you know, no one is safe anymore. the books are definitely getting darker. And whereas the Scream movies talked about this, and when they you know, talk about the horror genre and parody it, you know, the good guy always wins, and the girl who is pure and, you know, stays true to herself beats the bad guy. But it doesn't always happen anymore.
So we're getting more cynical, I guess.
You know, it might be. That's what it is. Or some of it, too, I think, is in order to shock people these days, you've really got to do more.
Well, we were talking about Stephen King. He's got a new one out, too, right now. And it didn't sound, on first blush, I just read a synopsis of it. It didn't sound even like a horror book.
No, it's definitely not. It's a science fiction story about traveling back to, and I think it came out tomorrow, comes out tomorrow. It's a science fiction story about traveling back to the time of the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, it sounded sort of romantic, actually.
Yeah, it's definitely a different kind of story. I've been, you know, I work with lots of readers. Obviously, the horror readers are coming in droves to the library these days, but a few people have asked about it. And I say it's for a reader of either a certain age or a certain interest. You know, if you're really interested in that whole time period of the Kennedy assassination, you're a baby boomer, you remember it as from childhood, then that's the book you're going to read. You know, it's for you. The regular horror fans know. But his book last year, Full Dark, No Stars, which was four novellas and won a Bram Stoker Award for Best Collection, is a fabulous, stark four novellas. They're not really horror because they don't have that supernatural element that a lot of horror books need to have. So, but they are very dark psychological fiction that are great for a wide range of readers who want to see why people love Stephen King.
Well, one of the books you wanted to talk about is one that sounded, just the plot sounds so original, and I had just been reading about it and then made a trip out to the country, and I couldn't stop thinking about it as I looked at the cornfields, but the one you talk about is called The Caretaker of Lorne Field.
Yeah, this came out in 2010, and I just love giving it out to people. Dave Zeltzerman is the author, and that was his first novel. Here's the imaginative setup of the book. So we have this guy named Jack Durkin, and he's the current caretaker of Lorne Field, which is somewhere in modern-day rural New England. He is the most recent in a 300-year line of the field's caretakers, going back generations. So his job is he works from dawn till dusk every single day, from spring until first frost, pulling the weeds that grow in Lorne Field. But these are not any weeds. These weeds are vicious monsters, which, if not culled, will grow to their full form, leave the ground, and actually go out and try to destroy the world. But then again, they might just be weeds, and the only way to find out is to stop pulling those weeds in the field. And it's just an interesting look at personal psyche, a scary, spooky story in the middle of the woods. It has the historic aspect that people really like. It's not very long. It's like 300 pages. It moves quickly, and it has a fabulous ending.
Yeah, it sounds like it could almost be funny or haunting.
Yeah, it's not funny, though, because the author takes it very seriously. The caretaker has two sons. The oldest son is supposed to become the next caretaker, but, you know, he's this 21st century jaded teenager, and he's like, Dad, you're crazy. You know, I'm not doing this. Mm. And so there's this inner story of family responsibility and, you know, the greater good. But then again, it could all be in his mind. It's very interesting.
So that's a short novel, you said.
Yeah, it's only about 300 pages. Most public libraries have it. It was very well reviewed when it came out. And I just keep giving it out because the level of blood and gore is fairly minimal. It's much more psychologically disturbing. So it's good to give to a wide range of people.
Well, going back to zombies for a moment, another one that caught my eye, Night of the Living Trekkies, which, you know, has to have some humor there. You've got Star Trek fans running around. But is it scary, too?
You know, it is scary. One of the interesting things that's happening in horror today, and it started back, and people will remember when Pride and Prejudice and Zombies first came out, and it's called the mashup. And what it is it's a type of horror where, I call it comic horror, where you take a story that people know and change it a little. And it could be a real story like Pride and Prejudice or something like, you know, science fiction fan conventions, which is what is in Night of the Living Trekkies. And you mix in a horror element. This book is scary. It actually got starred reviews in all of the journals like Publishers Weekly, Booklist. It's just a great book. So you have a science fiction fan convention, sort of like Comic-Con, and a virus slowly begins to spread. And it really is frightening, like a Walking Dead. The virus is spreading, and no one can stop it. And at first, people don't really, they think it's funny. They think it's a joke. So soon we have this small band of survivors, and they're all strangers to each other, but they're forced to work together to find a way to escape this all-out attack by very hungry zombies. So it's a combination of that dead-on parody. It has a lot of Star Trek trivia, but it also is scary. They're really honestly trapped in this convention with no way out. These are quite popular. The whole comic horror idea is quite popular today.
What's another example of that?
Another example of comic horror that's a little bit different would be, it also got starred reviews, The Zombies of Lake Wobegon. It's a parody of Garrison Keillor's portrayal. I thought it was for NPR.
Yeah, I love it.
And it's a parody of his portrayal of Minnesotans as steadfast people who don't want to draw attention to themselves. So the dead, both human and animal here, begin to rise as zombies, and the good people of Lake Wobegon must band together to save themselves. But the interesting twist is also it turns out that one resident has been a secret serial killer all the while, who's trying to reanimate his victims and create his own army. So it is chilling because it talks about, like most zombie novels, not just the monsters attacking us from the outside, but those monsters that lurk among us.
Yeah.
And another great book, if you're just interested in it, it is published by the Horror Writers Association, and it's on to going on to its third edition, but it's called Blood Light, and it's a collection of comic stories, comic horror stories. It's edited by Kevin Anderson, and it has stories by, like, Charlene Harris, but also maybe people you haven't heard of. It's quite interesting.
And Kevin Anderson, the same Kevin Anderson of Night of the Living Trekkies?
Different one.
Oh, different one. Okay.
Kevin J. Anderson. Kevin J. Anderson is actually quite well-known. People might know him from taking on the Dune series by Herbert when he passed away with his son Brian Herbert. It is a different Kevin. I forgot about that. This is Kevin J. Anderson. That's Kevin David Anderson, the Trekkies. But, you know, Christopher Moore, which people might be familiar with too, is the king of the satirical horror novel. And he's quite funny with one called You Suck, which makes fun of the whole vampire tales.
Well, what about horror for young adults? And is it really that different from, you know, adult fiction at this point?
You know, there is a lot of difference, I do have to say. Interestingly, Stephen King is read quite often by young adults. He's actually known for being an author who young adults turn to if they're higher-level readers at a quite early age, which is interesting because, you know, he does have sex and violence in his books. But every year there are some young adult books that turn up on this list that the Young Adult Librarian Association puts out called the Alex Award. And those awards are for books that are adult books that are appropriate for young adults. A couple years ago, there was a really popular one, and it was a werewolf novel done in free verse. And it was called Sharp Teeth by Tony Barlow. And I might have talked about it last year when I was on. But what it is, it's a novel in free verse that mixes horror and a traditional noir story. It's set in Los Angeles, and there's plenty of sex and gore, but it's not too graphic. And it's the seedy underbelly of L.A., and there are three competing packs of werewolves who are fighting for supremacy and sort of seeking out revenge for past injustices. But then there's this one detective who is connecting all the packs because he's looking into some suspicious murders that are connected to dogs. The interesting thing about the book is because it's in free verse, you're unsettled from the start. And if you look carefully, the edges of the pages, it was published in a way that the lines don't all justify like a regular book, and they look like shark teeth, which is kind of cool. And I really liked the originality of it. And then another really popular horror author, his name is Jonathan Mauberry, Maberry, and he wrote a he wrote a young adult zombie series that began with Rot and Ruin. And he normally had written adult books, so this was an interesting departure. And what I like about this book in terms of giving it to readers, Rot and Ruin's the first one, Dust and Decay is the second, the third will be out sometime in 2012. It's your basic apocalyptic zombie story. There's a young boy named Benny Imura who was a baby when the zombie apocalypse came. He was saved by his half-brother Tom, but their parents were victims. And then we shoot forward 14 years later, and Benny and Tom live in a California town that's surrounded by fences. But there are rules in this town. 6 months after your 15th birthday, you have to get a job to help out. You can still go to school, but you have to start having a job. So he's up against this deadline, Benny, of turning 15. And he finally decides he'll join the family business. His brother Tom is a bounty hunter who kills zombies outside of the walls of town. And what they call the Rot and Ruin. That's what everyone calls the apocalyptic areas. So Benny goes with his brother Tom and out into the Rotten Ruin, and his entire life, everything he knew is turned upside down. So it's a moving young adult story about coming of age and finding out what's out there in the adult world. But it's also a great story for people who are sort of turned off by the heavy gore in a zombie novel because it is written for a young adult audience. It's toned down a little bit.
And I think you have some other books that fall into that same category. We should maybe talk more about those when we come back from break.
Yeah.
And we're talking this hour with Becky Spratford. She is the Reader's Advisory Librarian at Berwyn Public Library in Illinois. And she's also the author of Horror Reader's Advisory, the Librarian's Guide to Vampires, Killer Tomatoes, and Haunted Houses. And her follow-up is called The Reader's Advisory to Horror, Second Edition, and that will be published in January. And we welcome your phone calls this hour. We want to hear what your favorite scary reads are of all time, or maybe if you've had some new discoveries, it would be great to have you share those with us as well. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or you can send your email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And coming up at 11 o'clock, join Larry Mueller for a discussion about Mildred Fish Harnack, the only American woman to be executed on direct orders by Adolf Hitler. That's 11 o'clock's Larry Mueller. And this hour, we're talking about spooky reads with Becky Spratford. She is the Reader's Advisory Librarian at Berwyn Public Library in Illinois and the author of The Horror Reader's Advisory, The Librarian's Guide to Vampires, Killer Tomatoes, and Haunted Houses. And Becky, you said you had further recommendations for people who were a little bit squeamish about horror books, but maybe wanted a bit of the thrill. Now, we just talked about the YA book, Rot and Ruin, by Jonathan Mulberry. What else do you recommend?
You know, it's good to go to classics if you really want to understand why people like to be scared with what they read. So I always suggest Shirley Jackson as a great place to go. All of her stories are absolutely terrifying, especially in a psychological sense. But The Haunting of Hill House, which originally came out in 1959, is often cited as the most terrifying haunted house story ever told. And really, she just gets it. The story focuses on four strangers who come together to stay in a notoriously haunted mansion. And what transpires during their stay is just terrifying. And what it does is it makes you absolutely frightened and terrorized without any gore. Her influence is just huge. She's had been recently recognized with the Modern Library putting out an edition of all of her works, which is a big honor. And she just does a great job. If you want to be scared and feel that fear, but not actually have to read about dismemberment of anybody.
So how does she do it? What happens in the book that's so terrifying but doesn't involve gore?
You know what she does?
Without giving it away, I guess.
Yeah, I don't want to give away too much. And, it's not very long, too, which is great. You could get it out of the library today and read it and enjoy it. Because she goes into the four people and really creates these great characters that are all slightly, something's wrong with them, or there's a reason they're putting this house together. or why they're seeking the redemption they feel this house will, this stay in this house will give them. And she just probes their minds and lets you go in there and see through their sort of hurt minds and what's going on in their twisted heads, but could be going on right in front of them. And it makes you think about yourself, and if you're in a dark room, if you hear a noise, what does your brain start thinking of? She just takes what you already know and puts it out there on the page. And it's great, because it really makes you think about it. You don't want to go in a dark corner of your house after reading this book.
Well, I guess that's true of the Pines in terms of wanting to stay away from certain activities after you read
horror books. I happen to be originally from New Jersey, so Robert Dunbar does set his books in the Pine Barrens of New Jersey, which immediately puts me in a positive mood to look at this book. And I grew up with stories of the Jersey Devil, which is New Jersey's sort of official haunted creature.
And what are the New Jersey Pine Barrens? I've never heard of them. When I picture New Jersey, I picture, you know, built-up shoreline.
You know, some people know them from, there's a famous Sopranos episode where some of the characters are chasing these Russian guys through the Pine Barrens. They're in South New Jersey, south of where the Jersey Shore takes place, and east of Philadelphia. And they're a national, or I guess they're a state park. It's just dark, dark woods that has very little in it but trees, and very thick trees. And lots of campers go there.
Well, the name is pretty evocative.
Yes. So he has actually two stories, one The Pines and one called The Shore. And they're not necessarily sequels, but they are linked. And since people already, even people who live there, you know, you go there maybe on a Girl Scout field trip, but you're in and out during the day. They're mysterious and desolate in what's a very built-up state, so it's quite interesting. But there's a monster on the prowl in an isolated setting, which, you know, horror loves the isolated setting. A town cut off by a storm, the deep, dark woods, a haunted house in a field off by itself. And this plays it up perfectly. They're already mysterious. It's dark. There's a monster out to get you. There's no, you know, bars on your cell phone. There's nothing you can do. And it's great. People love it. I love it. But it is a little more gory than some of the other stories. So you have to be ready for a little bit of that.
Okay. So this is the Jersey Devil we're talking about.
Yes.
We have a couple emails from people here I want to get to. Let's see. And by the way, we have an open phone line. If you want to call up and share your favorite scary read at 1-800-642-1234. And email is talk@wpr.org. And in the meantime, a listener would like you to comment on Guillermo del Toro's vampire books.
Sure. So that's the Strange trilogy. I technically do not consider those horror. Let's talk about that for a second, because it's quite interesting. The definition, the new definition I have of horror is it's a story in which the author manipulates the reader's emotions by introducing these situations where unearthly creatures and unexplained phenomena threaten the protagonist, but also provoke terror in the reader. And the thing about the Strange trilogy, those books are great. They're about a vampire plague that comes in. And the second one, we're on to the second one. There'll be a third one coming out. It's much more of a supernatural thriller. Although there is an unexplained phenomenon, people turning to vampires, it does have this science base. And a lot of horror readers like a more speculative, this couldn't really happen base to their stories. But also, it's much more about the hunt. It's about the hunt for the person responsible for starting this plague. And the other thing is, most traditional horror stories, these supernatural creatures are only bad guys. There are no good. It's not like the Sookie Stackhouse stories by Charlaine Harris where, you know, Sookie's fighting with some of these vampires and shapeshifters for the side of good. Those are more of what's called a paranormal story. But the Del Toro books are a thriller in that we have one of the good guys is actually a vampire, and he's working with the police chief, and the idea is to hunt out the bad guys. It's definitely scary, but in a much more traditional suspense thriller way.
And what about another that has been highly recommended by one of our listeners, The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman?
Oh, I love The Graveyard Book. It's still one of the absolute best books I've ever read. The interesting thing about Neil Gaiman is what he really does is write what's called dark fantasy. His stories have a much more fantastic element with a focus on magic, and they happen to be on the darker side. But, you know, the Graveyard Book's being talked about because it was just on NPR as a backseat reads with families reading the book together, and it did win the Newbery Award for Best Children's Book of the Year a few years ago. It does start off very scary. An assassin named Jack is literally climbing the stairs of an old house carrying a knife with blood dripping off of it. We see a picture of it. And he's already killed four members of a family, leaving only this one baby in the attic to be murdered. But somehow this baby has crawled out of the house and into a nearby historic graveyard that's now been turned into a nature park. And the boy's newly dead parents ask the resident ghosts to protect the boy. And so begins his life as the only living resident in a graveyard. And he gets renamed Nobody, and they call him Bod. And he's raised by ghosts named Mr. and Mrs. Owens. And it's really, it's much more The Jungle Book by Kipling, only in a graveyard.
Oh, right.
It is definitely spooky. But again, the main focus of the story is not to invoke terror in you, because the ghosts are all his friends. In fact, this killer who's out to get him, Jack, is the bad guy. He's the bad guy throughout the book. It's much more of a serial killer stalking novel than it is a horror book. It's definitely dark, but it's I would say The Jungle Book, only, you know, put a little darker spin on it, have ghosts instead of wolves raising the little boy.
Well, to kind of step back from all of this a moment, why do you think that so many people love to read these kinds of books? I mean, books that make you feel uncomfortable, creeped out, terrified. They make you want to leave the light on at night. So why read them?
You know, that's a really great point to make. First of all, I have to say, what I do as a librarian is not force horror books on people. It happens to be my subspecialty, but what I do is called Reader's Advisory, and what we do is try to match what people already want to read with the books we have available. So the idea, though, is there are people out there who like to be frightened. They like that uneasy feeling, the anxiety, and the suspense. I liken it to the popularity of James Patterson. You know, he's currently the best-selling author in America. We have hundreds of copies of his books with hundreds of holds. They're not horror, but they are all about this suspense, and they have a lot of gore and violence, which is funny when people come in and say, oh, I don't like scary or books with lots of blood and violence, but I love James Patterson. You know, he does have a lot, but the focus is on that suspense, that uneasy feeling, that tracking the killer tracking the protagonist, and that's the same thing horror does, just from a different light. One reason people like horror, especially over something more realistic like a James Patterson story, is that I have a lot of people coming into me and saying things like, I don't want a terrorism thriller. I don't want a serial killer thriller. I want something that is totally unreal. Fiction's an escape already. And horror makes an especially satisfying escape because it's not real. There are no zombies. There are no vampires. There are no witches in the world. These things could not happen. For many, it's an escape from the real horrors in their life. You know, I always say no matter how bad things are going in your life, reading a story about someone being tracked down by a pack of zombies is way scarier. Also, people also look at horror as a safe way to examine the dark side of humanity. People say, oh, well, I don't like to do that well. Do you watch a show like Law & Order SVU? A lot of people do. It's a top-rated TV show. Hmm. It's all about the dark side of humanity. And horror is a way to look at that. The characters, too, our protagonists in horror, are such ordinary people. They're not superstars. They're not like adventure heroes. You know, I say like MacGyver, who can save the day with a paperclip and gum. They're not. They're ordinary people. They have personal demons they have to overcome. They rise to the occasion, and then they beat both their personal demons and the ones actually physically coming after them. It's very inspiring to many people to see that everyday person rise above. Stephen King does this fabulously. If you read a book by Stephen King, his heroes are never the alpha males. They are always the down-on-their-luck people where something is not going right in their life, but they rise to the occasion and save everyone at the end.
So it's interesting. You're almost saying there's something inspiring about that. The everyman can find a moment to shine.
Yeah, and I really, looking into, because a lot of what I've done in my research is looking into why people like to read horror. Why do we like this? What are they looking for? And myself, I enjoy just that sort of twisted and macabre look at the world, too. You know, I read so many books all the time. And I like the ones that take a new angle and look at things from a different perspective. And horror is a fun way to sort of put a twist on the world in front of you and see it in a different way. And, you know, a lot of these books have social commentary, too. All these zombie books are really about blindly following someone. You know, that's what they say, the hordes of shambling zombies blindly following some sort of instinct. But they also, too, talk about, because they're all post-apocalyptic, so they also talk about how people would react in a crisis and how they rise to the occasion. And those are the underlying themes in those zombies books, which is why I think they're so popular right now.
Yeah, it's interesting because zombies have really gotten hot, maybe starting 5 years ago, and they haven't gone away. So it suggests that there's something there that's particularly resonant to our time.
Yeah, they really are a big deal now. When you have times of political and economic unrest, some of these stories seem to come out. In the late 60s and early 70s, there was a lot of political and economic unrest, and that's when the George Romero films, Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, came out and really changed the entire zombie culture. This idea of a zombie starting from some kind of plague came from him. Before that, zombies were much more, they go back to the voodoo times of some kind of spirit using their powers to have people rise back from the dead and come back for nefarious purposes. But with George Romero, it changed, and it became much more of a post-apocalyptic story, taking the place of maybe some of those Cold War stories of a nuclear apocalypse. We get this virus and it spreads, and that's what happens now all the time in zombie books. I haven't seen one for a long time in which that doesn't happen. And again, it's a political commentary about how people just sort of blindly follow some kind of charismatic leader, or like I said, what happens, all this doom and gloom, if the world does have some sort of apocalypse, what are we going to do?
Let's take one more phone call before our break. We have, Donna joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Donna.
Hi, how are you folks doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Oh, real good. Thank you. Just a quick call. I thought I might recommend for anybody who wants to read a kind of a scary book. It's not monsters and gore and all that kind of stuff. It's probably one of the most bleak and depressing books I've ever read, so it's a great read at the beach. I'm sure you all know it. It's The Road by McCormick.
You know, that's a great story, and I have read that and posted a review on it. And it's funny you say it's one of the most bleak and depressing books you've ever read, because I actually think that it's one of the more uplifting of these post-apocalyptic stories. And, you know, whether or not they're horror, post-apocalyptic stories are huge also right now. Zombies happen to be one way people bring that out. But in The Road, we don't really know what happened. But America's pretty much been destroyed, and a father and son are on this walk looking for basically hope and a place where they can help start culture over again and civilization. The father is very ill and obviously dying, and he just wants to find safety for his son before he does die. But what's so great about this story, which is not in Zone 1, by the way, which I mentioned at the beginning, is at the end, there is this sense of hope that the son has found a place of good people who are trying to restart over civilization. And for me, I find that uplifting, because throughout the story, they meet murderers and bandits and people who've gone crazy from what's happened. I mean, the own mother has killed herself before the story begins because she can't take it. And honestly, for Cormac McCarthy, if you haven't read him, it's probably one of his happiest endings in a book, because his books do not end well. And Oprah did pick it as one of her reads before her show went off the air, too.
I agree with Donna. I thought that one was pretty bleak. But you're right. Maybe there is a ray of hope at the end. But the whole post-apocalyptic world, I mean, I guess, as you were talking about, maybe sometimes it just hits a little too close to home these days.
It does. And when you don't have the zombies, and that's why that one, I think, resonates with people more. Again, a story with the zombies, like A Rotten Ruin by Jonathan Mulberry, which I mentioned before, there is that element that couldn't happen. There are no zombies. So it gets you have a little bit more of an escape, whereas The Road, they never tell you what happened, but it's some kind of apocalyptic event that was probably self-induced in terms of some kind of war. And there was nothing anyone could do about it. It feels much more real because it could happen. That is infinitely more scary than a horror book where, you know, these unearthly creatures are coming at you. You can step back a little and have some distance.
Well, we're talking spooky reads this hour with our guest Becky Spratford. She's the Reader's Advisory Librarian at Berwyn Public Library in Illinois and the author of Horror Reader's Advisory, The Librarian's Guide to Vampires, Killer Tomatoes, and Haunted Houses. And she's got a new book coming out in January. It's the Reader's Advisory to Horror 2nd Edition. And we'd love to know where you turn when you want a good scary read. What are your all-time favorite scary read? And why do you think that we enjoy reading things that terrify us, maybe about the supernatural? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send your email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert, back with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're talking with Becky Spratford. She's the Reader's Advisory Librarian at Berwyn Public Library in Illinois and the author of The Horror Reader's Advisory, The Librarian's Guide to Vampires, Killer Tomatoes, and Haunted Houses. And we have another caller on the line. Let's go next to Lynn, who's joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Veronica. It's not exactly a horror book. It's a Jasper Ford
book.
Yeah, it's The Last Dragon Slayer. And it really speaks clearly to corporate greed and staying true to who you are. And it's about big magic and starting over. And it's one of the, I'm an old broad, and it's a life-changing book. You know, it's like one of those, to quote Arsenio, it's, you know, one of those things that make you go, it's also dragons and magic. And
is there just the one book, Lynn, or is there a series?
No, Jasper, this is his first in, you know, he's got the Thursday next, but it's just The Last Dragon Slayer. I searched for it. I mean, you have to look for it.
Yeah, that book, Jasper Ford, is extremely popular author in libraries because he also uses a lot of literary allusions in his book. His most famous series, which the caller referred to, is the Thursday Next series, which takes place in a sort of parallel universe to ours where this Thursday Next can go into books, and it talks about, in a very meta way, how books are built, and there's a book world where all the characters we love live. This one she's mentioning is very hard to find. I believe it's actually only out in England, and it might be in Canada. But he just does a great job with all of his books, taking the things we know, again, and twisting them in some sort of way that really makes you think about your life in a completely different way. And he uses, like I said again, that real things that are already happening. So it's quite closer to home sometimes than a monster story.
Hmm. All right. Well, thank you for that recommendation. That sounds interesting. The Last Dragon Slayer. And let's go next to Tom joining us from Walworth County. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Many years ago, I read a short story called The Willows. It was written, I don't have the author's name in front of me, but it was written early in the 20th century, and it's the story of two men that are taking a trip down the Danube. And I understand there's a huge morass of like a giant swampy area where the Danube spreads out. And they are winding their way through this, and the night settles, and they have to spend the night on a kind of a dry spot in the middle of this giant swamp. And there's something there that is out to get them. And it's never made clear what it is, and the story just terrified me. At night, I literally could not go to sleep. I was afraid of the dark, and I was... I thought I'd mention this because it's just an incredible story.
You know, it is. The author is Algernon Blackwood. And
what a name.
Yeah, and they are from the early 20th century. You know, he is considered like the British H.P. Lovecraft. H.P. Lovecraft was quite a famous American horror writer in the early 20th century. And he has a couple classic stories, The Willows, The Wendigo, and then The Listener. And there's compilations of them. You can usually find them at most public libraries, and there are compilations that are still in print. But it's exactly what he described. It's down the Rhine River, which in great horror books, and this happens in The Willows, that isolated setting becomes a character unto itself. And the river really becomes this both beautiful and menacing character in the story. And he has possible psychological explanations for what's going on, but he also has possible supernatural explanations. Again, that mix of not knowing, which I mentioned way back with the first book, The Caretaker of Lorne Field, is really terrifying to readers. But it gives it that distance again because it could be supernatural. And all good horror stories, we talked about the pines before, the woods becomes a character, the Pine Barrens. That's what he did so well and why his stories are still read.
I love that it's on the Danube, which you think about this most placid. Okay, it's the Rhine. Okay, maybe that's a little more mysterious. You won't be hearing the Blue Danube waltz in your head.
Oh, but that would be really funny.
It does sound terrifying, though, I have to say. Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate that call. And we move on to Jean calling us from Oshkosh. Hi, Jean.
Hi. My thunder has been stolen. The scariest book I have ever read is The Willows.
Yeah.
And trying to put your finger on exactly what it is that frightens you is very difficult. If I may end with a comment about the New Jersey Barrens. All the ammunition for World War II in Europe came through the Barrens. And when I was at Fort Monmouth, I was in charge of a detail that would go essentially down to the extreme southern part of New Jersey and bring up ammunition and various other material war. And the Barrens had many of the same qualities as did the Willows. You didn't know what it was, but you know you wanted to get out of there.
Wow.
And that's why it makes such a great setting for a horror book. And again, there was a Sopranos episode in which it's a very spooky one, and it's called The Pine Barrens, that Sopranos episode. Okay. The place just speaks to that.
It does, and you're being squashed by all this green growth for 180 miles or so.
It's extremely dense. And, but you said you didn't know why The Willows was so frightening to you. It just was. And that is a good horror story. Atmosphere above all else in a good, scary story. The tone, the uneasy atmosphere, a place which makes you feel unsettled. If a horror writer is doing their job, they have created that feeling. You can't put your finger on it. But it's there. It permeates the entire story. I often tell people, if the author doesn't set up an uneasy atmosphere from literally the first paragraph, the story is not going to work as a horror story.
What do you think are your top sort of locations for spooky stories? The Pine Barrens is I think, seems like a pretty original one. Are there others like that where you think the place really makes the story?
I think it does. I think it's a great idea, and I mentioned this previously, to have some sort of connection. It has to be isolated. And some sort of connection to a spooky past really helps. That's why the old haunted houses work so great, because they're there, you can see them, but they've been there for a long time, and who knows what goes on in their basements and what their history is. And really popular settings are small, isolated towns, rural towns. You know, most of the American population lives in on the coasts in urban areas, or, you know, suburban, but near a major city. And so we don't have that connection to those little small towns as a whole populace. So to go into them and to sort of see what's going on, and, you know, 300 people only, well, you know, somebody's got to be the crazy one, and there's got to be a story. And, you know, every town has their haunted tales. My children yesterday went with their father to our local historical society in the town I live in. And one of the things they were doing were telling haunted stories of the town. Everyone has them. And they're always in these little nooks and crannies, places that you don't normally go on your own. Who wanders into a giant forest by themselves for no reason?
Right. And if you do, you're asking for it, I guess. Okay, let's take another caller now. Tom, joining us from Whitewater. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Morning.
The conversation today has helped me remember a collection of short stories that I probably read 40 years ago in a course that was called Latin American Literature and Translation. And I think the author is Jorge Luis Borges.
Mm-hmm.
I think either the story of the collection was called Aleph. And as I think about it, it was much more in the tradition of Twilight Zone. It was that unsettling kind of feeling. And it was just a marvelous collection. And, again, it came from a Latin American writer.
You know, Latin American writers in general have used magical realism for centuries. And it's part of their traditions. I mean, even Isabel Allende, who's probably the best known of these authors, her House of Spirits is a story that mixes a family saga with a magical realism. And yeah, Borges does this wonderfully also. And this is a book of stories that are being called philosophical puzzles and supernatural surprises. And they have a little bit of everything from the actual supernatural to, you know, things that are much more grounded in reality. You can get it easily. Some of those stories are in his collected fiction, and it is called Aleph and Other Stories, and it's been put out in a Penguin Classics edition, which, again, is probably available at most public libraries. Borges is an author that libraries carry. And he really plays off that Latin American tradition of taking the regular world and adding some kind of magic to it. In this case, frightening magic.
Okay, well, thank you, Tom. Good suggestion. And let's move to Mary, joining us from Dubuque, Iowa. Hey, Mary.
Hi. Yeah, my favorite scary book is Salem's Lot by, you know, Stephen King, obviously. And I'm on my third time reading it. I've been reading it since I was in junior high. can you suggest anything similar to that? I mean, it's just got a great feeling to it.
And Mary, before we get to that, remind me what that one's about. That's one that's been around for a while and everyone's heard of it, but I can't even remember what it's about anymore.
Yeah, it's from probably the 70s, and it's about vampires and about this spooky old house in town called the Marston House, and this guy named Ben, he's a novelist, and he had spent some time in this town as a boy, and so he goes back there to write a story about the Marston House, and it has a really bad history with murder and such. And at the same time, these two gentlemen open an antique store in town, and people start disappearing.
Okay.
Yeah, it is a classic vampire story. I definitely can give you some suggestions, but first let me say that for a while, the vampire story was sort of taken over by this twilightification of the vampire as these sparkly sex symbols for young girls to go after. And that's not what the tradition in horror of the vampire is. So the scary vampire is coming back with a vengeance recently in a reaction to it. One of the best recent vampire stories that has that sort of same interior people disappearing, it's someone among us and with a vampire, is this book called Let Me In by, and I cannot pronounce his name because he's Swedish, but it's called, his name is John Ajavid Lindquist. I did pass on that title to the show previously.
Right, it's L-I-N-D-Q-V-I-S-T.
Yeah, it originally, it was a movie last year that was really popular. It originally was called Let the Right One In, but they changed the name in America to Let Me In to reflect that popular movie. And it's a unique dark take on the vampire tale. It has a young adult protagonist. He's 12 years old. His name's Oscar, and he's a total outcast. But he is also obsessed with serial killers. Then there's this Eli, a young, pale-faced, smile-felling girl who happens to also be a vampire, who's his neighbor, and they become great friends. It is a very macabre friendship, and it does lead to violence as this young girl, Eli, tries to protect Oscar from being killed by a gang of bullies. So it's got some very real scariness in there. My other favorite new scary vampire book that I like to pass on to people happens to also have Stephen King's hand in it a little bit. It's a brand new series called The American Vampire. It's actually called just American Vampire. It did win a Will Eisner Award for the best new graphic novel that came out last year. Stephen King helped with the first set of stories, but Scott Snyder is the main author here.
And we've got about 10 seconds.
Sure. It's a historic American vampire story with really scary vampires. They are not going to be the ones you want to take on a date.
Well, Becky, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for all these great recommendations, and I hope you have a great time trick-or-treating tonight.
Thank you very much. Happy Halloween.
Thanks, you too. Becky Spratford, our guest this morning. She is the Reader's Advisory Librarian at Berwyn Public Library in Illinois and the author of the forthcoming book, The Reader's Advisory to Horror, second edition, that's going to be published in January. Thank you to Rhonda Fanning for answering your phone calls this morning and for producing the hours this morning as well. I'm Veronica Rickert. Happy Halloween. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.